This is Hemant.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please support the show by going to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. $5 a month, you'll get ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus episodes.
You hit that please really hard. Do you have a rough month, bud?
I know.
Please
listen,
support us.
All of you, please support us. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited for the bonus episode. I have a humdinger to tell you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And I will ruin your day very soon with these stories. So
well,
I figured.
That's fun. Yeah. This is a neat relationship that we've established here.
Let me ruin your day first with this story out of Missouri. And they were debating a bill that basically would ban gender affirming surgeries for minors. And it's sponsored, one of the co-sponsors of this bill is a state senator named Mike Moon, and basically it would ban healthcare providers from performing transition-related surgeries on minors. They also would not be able to prescribe hormones or puberty-blocking drugs to kids. And just to state the obvious here, both of those things have immense value for trans kids. They are not just prescribed on a whim. Trans kids cannot just walk in and get those. And so they were debating this bill where Republicans are trying to override the expert opinions of healthcare providers, all just because they like being cruel. But that point of like, why are you doing this? And the answer is always, well, we're doing this to protect the kids. A Democratic state representative, Peter Meredith, wanted to make that point during the floor debate. And he pointed out that one of the co-sponsors of this bill, Mike Moon, doesn't actually care about supporting the kids. And I'm going to play you a clip here that I want you to hear. And here's the setup for it. He's trying to explain that, really, you, Republican Mike Moon, you want to do this to protect the kids? Because we know what you said a couple of years ago when it came to kids. And the first voice you're going to hear is the Democrat. And at the near the end of the clip, you will hear Mike Moon chiming in. I will let you listen to what it is he said. But again, first voice you hear is the Democrat.
I've heard you talk about parents' rights to raise their kids how they want. In fact, I just double-checked. You voted no on making it illegal for kids to be married to adults at the age of 12 if their parents consented to it. You said, actually, that should be the law because it's the parents' right and the kids' right to decide what's best for them, to be raped by an adult. Okay?
Do you know any kids who have been with married marriage at age 12?
That was the law. You voted not to change it.
Do you know any kids who have been married at age 12?
I don't need to.
I do. And guess what? They're still married.
Gentlemen.
Oh, no.
So just to spell out what they just said, a few years ago, there was a law that would have changed the state law to change like the age of marriage was legal at like 15 in Missouri. And they were like, why don't we change that to 16? Which I know it's still young. Mm-hmm. But it said if you're 16 or 17, you still need your parents' permission. It's a little better, but it's still very disturbing. And Mike Moon opposed it because he felt that any children as young as 12 ought to be allowed to get married with their parents' permission. And what you heard him say in that clip that I know someone who got married at 12 and they are still married. And then he clarified later, mm-hmm. It wasn't in the clip, but he clarified, not an adult to a 12-year-old, like a 12-year-old to another child. And now they're older and everything is fine. Which, to be clear, horrible answer all around.
Whew, okay. Holy shit. Okay. I want to start by saying that truly it is so telling to me when these people say that if they are still married, it means everything's good and hunky-dory.
I mean, even if you're an adult.
Yeah, truly.
You're still married. Honestly, it doesn't mean everything's okay.
Truly, this is like a full-on argument I've had with my dad that he's like, divorce is always sad and bad and whatever. And I was like, no, it's okay for things to end. It's okay if something isn't working out anymore to walk away from it. That's fine.
It's like the sunk cost fallacy in real life.
Truly. Like, oh my God, that's exactly what it
you
is.
You don't have to keep it going if it's not working. Yeah. And I promise you, and I have not personally experienced this in my family, but like speaking on behalf of kids whose parents have gotten divorced, I promise you staying together for the sake of the kids does not make the kids feel better.
Ain't it. That ain't it, fam. So sorry, I said fam.
But in this case, he's saying these kids got married and they're still together.
Does he have a specific thing, or is he just doing the "I have black friends" thing?
No, he said he knew somebody who got married. I don't know who this person is.
Just like he has many black friends. Exactly. He just can't think of their
names.
But
the thing
right
is, the point you were making about like just because they're together doesn't necessarily mean they're happy. Mm-hmm. The people who were children when they got married, or just let's broaden it out, people who got married young, like let's say they were 18 and 19, mm-hmm. like there is more pressure on them to stay married, maybe for religious reasons or cultural reasons. And it's that much harder. And like they didn't even realize necessarily what they were stepping into when it happened. So like saying that this kid who got married, who's not seeking divorce later on, that is not a defense of child marriage.
Wow. It's so funny because I was just having a conversation today about, you know, I'm teaching writing lessons now and I work with a lot of teenage girls, right? That's sort of the primary horse girl demographic is teenage girls. And it is so challenging to deal with teens because they are just emotionally much less developed than grown-ass adults. That's not a criticism. That's just sort of biology. And every time I hear about a dude wanting to date a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 17-year-old...
A dude being roughly how old?
Anybody over 23
who
wants to date a teenager, that freaks me the... Like, I'm not saying there aren't mature teenagers, but, like... Truly, what are you talking to?
If you're 23 and you're like, my girlfriend's in high school, she's 18 though. Like,
you're
it's
like, go
legal.
See my girlfriend, she's the understudy in the High School Musical.
Yeah. I still have questions. Yeah. I'm not questioning the legality of it. I'm questioning what the hell's going on in your lives that you feel like you're in the same place right now.
Well, and what I have understood to be the case is men tend to date younger and younger women as women their age peers realize they have nothing to give. So like, you know, a idiot who's 35 who lives on his own and isn't doing anything particularly good is
that's
like
half our listening audience.
Yeah, it's me. but like that, yeah, like you have to bring something to relationships. So if you have nothing going on in your life and nothing, no personality or skills or kindness or like physical attraction or nothing, you're going to have to keep going younger and younger until you find somebody with standards low enough. Because Lord knows these dudes are not going to like self-improve. No, they're going to just go younger and younger until they get to a girl who hasn't figured out his tricks.
Yeah. Mike Moon later clarified, besides clarifying that, no, it wasn't.
Mike Moon is an outstanding name, by the way. It's too bad.
He was like, you guys, it's not an adult marrying a 12-year-old. Here's what happened, you all. Some child impregnated a minor of similar age. Their parents said they should get married. And he said, they are still married today. That to him
is
the happy story.
15 years old now.
Yeah.
Married like, 3 years.
Let's suppose they're all 40 now. You're still defending the idea that because they did not have an abortion mm-hmm. when this girl was 12, and because she married the hypothetical like 13-year-old boy, we should all be okay with that scenario today. Always. Like, it's just, and by the way, remember, they're not discussing a bill about child marriage. They're discussing a bill about hurting trans kids.
Right.
And it deviated into this discussion of, hey, Republican who says you want to protect children, you're cool with child marriage.
Well, what I thought was interesting is when he kept saying, do you know any 12-year-olds who got married? Do you know any 12-year-olds who got married?
I do.
And when he said, like, I thought where he was going with that was they don't get married. It doesn't actually happen. We just think that it should be the right of. That's genuinely where I thought he was going, which would be less despicable.
Sure.
It's bad. Still very, very, very bad, but less despicable than being like, oh, yeah, a tween got raped and then married her rapist and had a baby before her body was fully developed, and they're still married, and definitely not because they don't have the emotional maturity to understand what they've gotten themselves into.
You're right. I was trying to think of, like, what was going through my head when I was 12, and it's like, one, you'd, for a lot of people, you don't have much of a childhood at that point, or it's been a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty standard, but you have nothing to... There's no growing up involved. You just lived a typical childhood. You haven't been through some shit.
Right.
Also, you barely have had time to develop crushes if you're 12. You probably haven't gone through any breakup that matters at 12 or puberty. So why should we assume they have the maturity to understand their options as wedded adults? But the point, and like, here's the thing. Oh, I forgot to mention this. Missouri bans divorces from being finalized if a woman or a girl is pregnant. So like, this is the law as it stands.
These people hate women so much, their eyes must cross.
So just to be clear here, Mike Moon says a 12-year-old girl is capable of getting married and having kids.
Happily married, Hammett.
But a 16-year-old trans girl who's seen a doctor for several months should have no say in getting gender-affirming care that could prevent depression. It's not even surgery. It could just set her up for help in the future, like success in the future, because she'll make it to adulthood.
That's the thing is... And this will always make me crazy. And it's always going to be the biggest, like, blight in the face of conservative Christianity writ large, is that we know what works. We know what stops abortions. We know what, you know, prevents, I mean, basically unwanted pregnancies, STDs, these kids having sex without knowing what they are doing. See, once again, Spring Awakening, always relevant. Written in fucking 1870, still relevant. I don't know. I just don't...
This guy,
I don't understand why they are more interested in fighting, in tilting at windmills than they are helping human, living, breathing human beings. That's what is always going to be really hard for me to swallow.
I mean, isn't that the
understand.
Question for the entire Republican Party?
Oh,
like,
100%.
Why are you getting so distracted by a trans person in a Budweiser commercial?
Yeah.
That's the whole week. It's been that.
Truly.
Instead of helping people. Because they're not interested in using the government to help people. They're using whatever platform and power they have to hurt the people who are not on their team already.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Moon, by the way, his campaign website, he's a believer in Jesus Christ.
What?
He met his own wife, by the way, not in elementary school, but at Baptist Bible College. Mm-hmm. And he's now a member of High Street Baptist Church in Missouri, where he serves as deacon, Sunday school teacher, and on several mission committees.
Children.
Yeah, maybe he's done some weddings for children. Who knows?
Yeah.
By the way, that name sounded familiar to me, and I had to, like, where did I hear this guy before? And you know what the answer is?
Keith Moon, like, great drummer of The Who?
No. Oh. Like, a decade ago. No, it was, like, 5 or 6 years ago. Not forever ago.
Okay.
This guy made headlines because he posted a video to Facebook where he slaughtered a chicken on camera and then pulled out its heart for all viewers to watch. Why? Why? What was he trying to do? He was trying to make some point about abortion. I don't remember what that point was.
Oh, my God.
He was just a crazy dude who, like, murdered an animal on Facebook Live.
Jesus Christ.
That's when he was a state representative. Now he's
sure,
a state senator.
Sure, we gotta promote this guy.
Yep.
I want to be clear that I eat meat, so I'm fine with... Obviously, like, I can't be like, oh, my God, he killed a chicken. Like, that's life. Doing it on screen is fucked up.
And then pulling an Indiana Jones sort of...
Have I ever told you the story the first time I saw Indiana... Which one is that?
That was Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom. I was at my neighbor's, like, three houses down, and we were watching that. And, like, she was the youngest by a lot, so we were always watching inappropriate. Like, she's the one who, like, taught me what, like, sex was, because she had very, very old siblings who had no filters. Anyway, so we're watching that. I'm probably six. And that motherfucker reaches into the guy's chest and pulls out his heart, and I screamed. I ran out the open sliding glass door and ran home to my house.
Nice.
I just fucking bolted. I was like, no, not today, Satan. It scared the ever-loving fuck out of me. This guy is a motherfucker, eh?
Jesus Christ. For what it's worth, I think the anti-trans bill, which is what that was all about, it did pass because Missouri is run by Republicans, so there's that.
This is so horrifying.
Let's talk about, speaking of horrifying, let's talk about the Dalai Lama. Here's what happened with him this week, which was wild. This made news this week, but it happened in February. The Dalai Lama hosted about 120 students who completed some leadership training sponsored by the India-based M3M Foundation. I don't know what they do. Leadership training. Whatever. Fine. The event, which was in the Dalai Lama's home city of Dharamshala, there was a video, that clip that went viral this week. And basically, you know how maybe you've seen this? I've seen this. Sometimes the Pope is doing like a Q&A with a group of young people.
I've never seen this.
I've seen a couple of these. But they'll pass the mic around like
Pope videos.
Oh, it's all I do. And like, whatever, you can ask the Pope a question and he answers it. I've never seen the Dalai Lama do it, but this is what he was doing. And a little kid, adorable little kid. Yeah, something like that. A cute little kid. Add a question for the Dalai Lama. They bring him the mic. And he's like, can I give you a hug? Or can you give me a hug? Very cute.
Aww.
And they translate this for the Dalai Lama. And he's like, come up here. Like, and you see the hug happen. Or, like, that's what was supposed to happen. And
so
that
far, so
would not have been weird.
Good.
So here's what actually happened at this point. The boy goes on stage to get his hug, which would have been adorable. The Dalai Lama told the boy to kiss his cheek first before hugging him, which, okay, maybe it's a cultural thing, but like, whatever. They hug. It's a little long, but it's a hug. Fine. Then the Dalai Lama points to his lips and tells the boy to kiss him, pulling him in close to do so, which, again, let's hypothetically chalk this up to a cultural thing. Then the Dalai Lama, like, stuck out his tongue, which is a traditional greeting in Tibet.
Okay.
And then he basically asked the boy to suck his tongue, which is not a traditional greeting in Tibet or anywhere else. And here's the thing. The boy, you could see in the video, and I watched the video, the boy gets close enough that their foreheads touch, but you could tell from body language, boy's not interested in doing this, and nothing happened like of that. And then, as if he was just joking the whole time, the Dalai Lama pulls away and then tells the boy, make sure in your future you align with those who create peace and happiness and avoid people who are violent. Then they hug one more time. Everyone's laughing and cheering. And there is laughter. And the whole video was, again, this happened in February.
Why were they laughing?
I don't know.
What was the joke?
They were cheering for the happy answer about, like, be around good people. But my take of watching that is no one was disturbed by what they just saw. So a clip of that began going viral this week about 2 months after the incident happened. And you can hear the Dalai Lama, like, you could see him stick out his tongue. You could hear him tell the boy to suck his tongue, which doesn't happen, but that was weird. And then this week on Monday, the Dalai Lama's office released this statement. I will read it to you. This isn't the entire statement. It's the relevant part. A video clip has been circulating that shows a recent meeting where a young boy asked His Holiness the Dalai Lama if he could give him a hug. His Holiness wishes to apologize to the boy and his family, as well as his many friends across the world, for the hurt his words may have caused. Interjecting here, I assume by words he means suck my tongue. And then the last line here, His Holiness often teases people he meets in an innocent and playful way, even in public and before cameras. He regrets the incident. And that's such a weird statement to me for a bunch of reasons. One, if you're going to apologize, you should, like, tell people what you are apologizing for.
Right.
You can't just issue, like, you guys, I'm sorry, I regret what happened. Bye, peace out. Like, no, it doesn't mention what the Dalai Lama did that he's apologizing for. It alludes to something, but he's like, to say that, you know, you guys were hurt by my words and you're hurt by the feelings, like, my words may have caused you.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry you were offended by me just playing around and teasing. Like, not how to do an apology.
Can I posit
that
perhaps he might be, you know, feeling his age mentally.
His age being 87.
Yeah, he's been Dalai Lama since 1904.
Since he was 2 months old, something like that. Yes,
yeah, like crazy. 1940, I think.
And the thing that I was bothered by with the apology is, like, it dismisses what he did as playful teasing that you people didn't understand without any expressed understanding of why people might be disturbed by what he did.
Yeah.
And also, again, I'm watching this, and hypothetically, best case scenario here, let's suppose he didn't mean anything sexual by it. It was just a thing. He thought he was joking.
Sure.
And it totally did not get, it was totally lost in translation. It's not a joke. I'm not defending any of this.
No.
But let's say it really was as he says he intended it. How many adults watch this happen in real time, standing a few feet away from the Dalai Lama this whole time? None of them said anything. None of them did anything in that moment. Because they have to have assumed this was all playful teasing as well. No one's bothered by it. And again, I'm not expecting the boy to say anything because he's a child.
Right.
But where are the adults here to step in and say, you know what, this is probably a bad idea.
That's yucky.
Just go away. That is disturbing.
Can guys just, like, calm the fuck down? Mm-hmm. Like, y'all are running wild out here.
And, like, this isn't some politician who's been on the stage for like a month. This is a guy who's been on the global stage
for literally
his entire life. And again, if
it
this
occurs
were
to me, I don't know what the fuck the Dalai Lama is or does.
Spiritual leader of
you
like Tibetan Buddhism.
You don't know either.
That's all I got for you. Mm-hmm. But like the fact that this tradition may not have translated well, the fact that that was lost on everybody in his orbit, that's troubling to me. If this were a politician, if this were a random dude on the street, if this were the Pope, like, I think there would be massive outrage, predictably, justifiably.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing about all of this. How many stories have we talked about on this show, have we heard, mm-hmm. about religious leaders who did absolutely inappropriate things in the name of faith,
mm-hmm.
always saying, I was just joking, I didn't mean anything by it. Like, all those grand jury reports involving Catholic priests, they are full of stories of clergy members who basically made kids perform certain acts. They were quote unquote innocent at first before they got truly awful.
Of course. It's called
grooming. Like,
even,
yeah, but all that stuff that happened, like, they knew what they were doing. It was small. It was what they considered to be innocent, mm-hmm. but it clearly wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even going out of my way here to say the Dalai Lama was trying to do any of that stuff. But like, at this point, where have you been for 20 years that you don't recognize this may come off the wrong way?
I really wonder if he had if he's dealing with dementia or something, because that's just such a bananas thing.
It is. And is everyone in his orbit suffering from dementia? Like, I genuinely do not think he was trying to get aroused this way. I don't think he thought this was sexual. I am deeply troubled by the fact that everyone in his inner circle who saw an act that someone had to know this could be easily construed as sexual. And no one seemed to care to put a stop to it in the moment. They just watched it happen. And had we not seen the clip 2 months later, no one would have known about this, which makes me wonder, has he done this before? That he thought this was a normal thing to do? I don't know. And all of this because a perfectly fine child asked a perfectly fine, cute question. Like, hey, you're the most famous person, one of them, in the world. Can I get a hug from you? That should not have been the moment you get on the global stage and whatever, this kid's life is now going to be this. I mean, thankfully his name isn't out there, but like,
that's
disturbing.
So weird.
Listen, if you're a religious leader of any religion,
just chill. Yeah. Can you just fucking chill for once?
Please.
Just chill.
I'm going to go to a story that actually is somewhat positive. This last weekend, I had my in-laws over and we needed to make dinner in a crunch. Instead of ordering out, we did something even easier thanks to ButcherBox. We were able to grab just what we needed and exactly how much we needed from the freezer. After that, everything else was a breeze. You too can skip the grocery store knowing you have the food you trust and the food you chose in your freezer. I know that might sound strange coming from me since I'm vegetarian, but they have a high-quality veggie burger that I absolutely love. They have options for pescatarians, too. And if you eat everything, that's also okay. The food from ButcherBox is high-quality, grass-fed, and free-range. Have peace of mind knowing there are no antibiotics or added hormones. Sign up at butcherbox.com/friendly and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/friendly and use code FRIENDLY to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. This is a Pew Research Center survey that came out this week. And if you think of Hispanic, Latino, Americans, I'll use those words interchangeably here for my ease. I would generally say, oh, most of them are probably Catholic. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that was true. If you go back to like 2010, 67% of U.S. Latinos, which is the terminology they're using in this survey, 67% were Catholic as of 2010. Only 10% were religiously unaffiliated. Okay. That seems about right. That's kind of the, if you asked me to guess, that's probably what I would have guessed. What came out this week that was surprising to me is those two numbers, those shares of those numbers have gone completely out of the window. Huh. Now, today, 43% of U.S. Latinos are Catholic. 43. It's dropped from 67 wow. to 43. And the religiously unaffiliated U.S. Latinos gone from 10% in 2010 to 30% today. 30% nuns,
wow.
30% religiously unaffiliated, 43% Catholic. And those are the only two groups that really shifted in any meaningful way.
Interesting.
Yeah, fascinating, which means like Hispanic Americans are basically ditching Catholicism slowly and steadily, and it's not that they're moving to a different type of Christianity.
They're just leaving religion.
They're just leaving organized religion altogether. Here's another interesting thing. They asked people, what was your childhood religion and what is your current religion? And when it comes to Catholics, 65% of U.S. Latinos said they were raised in Catholicism.
Say that again?
Wait. 65%.
Okay.
But today, only 43% are Catholic, which means 23% of them said they left their religion. Only 1% of people said they joined Catholicism. It's a net exodus of 22%. What about religiously unaffiliated? 13% said, I was not raised with any religion growing up, but that's 30% today. And that is a 20% of people who said, I became non-religious. Only 3% said they found God. Like a net gain of 17% there. So basically, Catholics are struggling to keep U.S. Latinos in the fold because they're all leaving to join nothing. They're just leaving altogether.
I don't know if you know off the top of your head, is this the largest chunk of like single population to leave, like in comparison to, you know, Irish Catholics or, you know.
You know what? I don't have those numbers in front of me. This study was specific about U.S. Latinos and their religion. And
I'd be very interested to see like, if it's evangelical, like disproportionately high compared to, I would be curious. To white Catholics.
I feel like if we're talking about U.S. Latinos, because they were so heavily religious as recently as 2010, it's not like, I mean, they could only go down. Like, that drop had to happen because it's not like they could go up very much. And I would assume that demographic is more religious than a lot of other ones. Mm. So, like, if you ask me about Black Americans as well, I would imagine, yeah, you're going to see a drop in Protestants
and a rise in nuns, too. Across the board.
But I asked Dr. Juhem Navarro-Rivera, who writes about atheism and secular politics, like, what do you think about all this? Why are they leaving Catholicism? What he told me is basically this is the generation raised after the church scandals came to light at the beginning of this century. Now,
the beginning of the century, Christ, we're old.
I know, 20-some years ago, and it's not a small number. And then, if you break this down, U.S. Hispanics, U.S. Latinos, if you break it down by age, even wilder, what percent do you think of Latinos ages 18 to 29 are non-religious, religiously unaffiliated. What percent? Again,
it was 40% across the board.
It was 43% across the board.
I'm going to say 76%.
It's tempting, right? It's 49%. Because there are just
more of them.
I know.
You set me up for failure.
Only 30% of them are Catholic. Like half of young Latinos have no religious affiliation.
And meanwhile, my understanding is that the Latinx population is increasing, according to white Republicans. So,
which means they are more younger. So, like,
so they're
growing
younger,
part
they're
of
less
them.
Religion, yep. And they're a bigger part of our demographic.
Yep.
All good news.
And the U.S. born Latinos are more non-religious than those who immigrated here or came here. So,
it's so interesting how the harder people try to push religion on the country, the worse it seems to be doing.
I wonder that all the time when it comes to all the anti-trans stuff we're seeing now, that's faith-based, usually. Definitely all the anti-abortion stuff we're seeing is faith-based. And you have to wonder what the backlash is going to be. I've already heard plenty of stories about this. We saw it with the judge in Wisconsin last week on the Supreme Court. Mm. Like, the backlash, like, even a lot of Republicans are not happy with the anti-abortion stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing that backlash. You have to wonder how much it's going to hurt organized religion.
Yeah.
Because the largest, most powerful religious groups are all in support of the same stuff. And this is what I was questioning with this Latino survey. Because, okay, church scandals. Yeah, you're going to want to leave the Catholic Church because of that. But also keep this in mind. If you look at the trends of religion in general in the country, think about like how white evangelicals and a good chunk of the Catholic Church and the hierarchy have allied themselves with the Republican Party in recent years. And what is the Republican Party? For the 4 years before Biden, the leader of the Republican Party, Trump, he called some Mexican immigrants rapists.
Mm.
This is a guy who posted a picture of himself eating a taco bowl on Cinco de Mayo.
So embarrassing.
He insisted that a Mexican judge couldn't possibly treat him fairly. Mm-hmm. And there's the whole border wall thing, downplaying his other racist remarks. And here's the thing. Republicans have gained shares of the Latino vote in the last presidential election, partly because they had nowhere to go but up. But also, it may be localized. Like, Republicans in Florida, where there are a lot of Latinos, yeah, the Republicans did really well with that demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of Texas, also true. But younger Latino voters, even if they don't identify as Democrats, they're definitely voting for them. And they seem to understand the GOP is not working in our best interests when you talk about, like, DACA, the DREAM Act, things like that. And the Christians who support Republicans don't give a damn about their community either. And Juhem Navarro Rivera also told me, how could Democrats, I asked him, like, could Democrats do anything with this information? He said, if they deliver on social justice, the environment, and economic opportunity, they could actually make pretty big inroads with this demographic. And then he added, these are the Democrats, so they'll probably squander the chance.
Yeah, which, you gotta fumble the ball. Otherwise, it's not exciting.
I'm also curious, like, religion is such a part of Hispanic culture that I would imagine it's really hard to walk away because, again, we've said this about African Americans too, like, it's not enough to just say, here are the contradictions in the Bible, so you should be an atheist now. It's, if you turn your back on God, for in a lot of ways, it feels like you're turning your back on your culture, which you don't want to do, and that is a reason a lot of people don't necessarily call themselves atheists. And so I kind of want to know, like, these numbers show non-religiosity is on the rise, but I wonder if that's actually an underestimate. And also, if you have a lot of young Latinos growing up without religion and they're comfortable with that, what happens when they start having children where it becomes even more normalized? That's going to spike up even more, the percentage. So I don't know. Like, has the culture become, this is a rhetorical question, has their culture become more accepting of atheism in the U.S.? Or has giving up the culture or that aspect of it just become an acceptable trade-off because of the harm caused by organized religion and the politics that go along with it?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to wonder how the GOP thinks they're ever going to get a young person to vote for them again. I really think that they have been, like, skating off this opinion that, like, okay, millennials will get more conservative as they get older, just like we did, but failed to understand that millennials weren't set up for success the way that boomers right. were. And so we're not wealthy now. And so we don't have money to protect. So again, it's the same thing. Like we talk about this all the time, is they're just continually trying to like narrow cast who they're talking to. And they're going to do that out of existence.
And they talk like they're speaking in a right-wing bubble. Like the language mm-hmm. you hear on a Fox like nighttime primetime show
right.
doesn't sound like any conversation most people have. It only makes sense within their like mega bubble.
Yeah.
Like where you say woke every third word
right.
and you cancel get mad about the dumbest shit. Like most people don't want to see their library shut down because you don't like a book that happens to be in it. But that's what they're going for. Most mm-hmm. people don't want to see extreme total bans on abortion.
Is it lowest common denominator that they're going for? Or is it just a race to the bottom?
Race to their base, which their base is shrinking and shrinking. And again, it just if you're trying to run a statewide campaign mm-hmm. or a national campaign, you need to get more voters who have no dog in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to go beyond your bubble, and they're doing nothing. Yeah. Doesn't mean they'll lose. No, I mean, we're talking about Democrats being the alternative. So, like,
right. Eh. I mean, right.
But
I just, it's kind of an interesting, I've seen, especially since the that elections in Wisconsin, I feel like I've seen a little more pearl-clutching from the GOP. Like, hey, gang, like, we really went all in on this anti-abortion thing, and
Kellyanne Conway was on Fox News saying, like, young people are not liking this stuff.
Ah.
And it's like, oh, you've become so self-aware. You know. Congratulations.
So you do yeah. know.
Maybe you should, like, so you guys are all going to change your policies to be less extreme, right?
No, and they're no,
like,
no, 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 no. It's no. the kids who are wrong.
That's right. Yeah, so I don't know.
Wow. It's just, and I want to be very clear, I'm not optimistic because I have lived in America since year of our Lord 1985, and God knows I haven't had a lot of reason to be optimistic. However, it does seem like...
Don't get hopeful.
I'm not
Stop
getting...
It.
I just said I'm not getting hopeful, but it does seem like the GOP is, like, collapsing in on itself like a dying star.
See, I've been thinking that for 20 years, and I'm wrong every
yeah,
time.
Yeah, but... They're losing big elections that should be gimmies. They should have had a gimme for that D-bag on the
they
Supreme Court in Wisconsin.
Every time I think it's a gimme, then some new state or some new candidate just finds a way to show me
I'm
an idiot.
I just don't know how they can keep doing these like transgressive policies. And it feels very much like first they came for the Jews and I didn't say anything because yeah. I was a Jew. Like, it does feel like they are, like, vilifying more and more groups of people. And eventually, like, it's yeah. you. Like, you're...
They're currently
you.
Going after beer drinkers who... I mean, yeah, and they'll
I
go after country music
fucking
at
Facebook
some point.
Thing where a dude put tampons with the Bud Light things.
Yeah, just
what does that mean, though?
Nothing.
Is the question it's... is what does it mean? And he did not only that, he put Bud Light cases in the fucking tampon aisle. Do these people have jobs?
No, they just post memes all day.
All they do is put more and more bumper stickers on their car
yeah.
and put bigger and bigger flags on the back of their truck
mm-hmm.
and moving shit around to Walmart that some person who's getting paid $13 an hour has to fix. Jesus Christ, gang, get it together. Figure
one
it
day,
out.
One day. So speaking, that seems like a good segue. So check this out. In the Loudoun County Public Schools in Virginia, there is a teacher there. Sorry if I mispronounced the county. There's a teacher at a public high school in the county who insists that she should be allowed to sign all her work emails.
Oh, boy.
With John 3:16 in the signature line. I think the actual full verse spelled out about Jesus gave his, whatever.
Jesus God so said, loved them.
God so loved the world,
begotten,
he gave his
only
begotten son, blah, blah, blah. No
yeah.
one cares. And so she wants to put
really
that in
after begotten
every
son.
Single email. And the Christian right group Liberty Council is representing her. And they sent a very angry letter to the school district where they're saying...
It's a public school, yeah?
Public school. And they're saying, like, you have to allow her to put John 3:16 in her emails. Why? Because you allow other district employees to include pronouns in their emails. That's literally their argument. Here's what they said.
Wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they think that clarifying my gender is the same thing as preaching to somebody about...
That is correct. Listen,
for the Lord so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son...
If you're a lawyer for Liberty Counsel,
forever?
You have taken a very bad turn in your life. And so this is what they end up with.
You've made mistakes.
You've made so many mistakes. Basically, their argument is if other teachers are allowed to include anything personal in their email signatures, like pronouns, then this teacher ought to be able to promote her religion, and not allowing her to do so is unconstitutional. But to be clear, and this is the school's argument, mm-hmm. putting like harmless quotations, like inspirational quotations in email signatures, mm-hmm. which some teachers do, doesn't interfere with their responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Identifying pronouns is just identifying information, like including a phonetic pronunciation after your name. Mm-hmm. It's not there to say, hey, everyone, I'm voting for this person. It's to help you out mm-hmm. when you're contacting me. Mm-hmm. It's there to benefit people who may not know who their kid's teacher is when you're talking to them. Like, if you see that as a promotion of some liberal agenda, that's your problem and a sign that you're addicted to, like, Tucker Carlson, not a sign that, like, some teacher is woke. Mm. Liberty Counsel also pointed out, like, they're citing Supreme Court decisions left and right, trying to say, we have the right idea here. And one of the things they cited was a recent case, we talked about it when it happened, in the city of Boston, where outside their city hall, they had, like, three flags.
Oh, the Christian flag.
And they said, we have like two flags that are guaranteed and then people can apply for the third one. Mm-hmm. And they said no to a Christian flag because right. they say we don't do religious flags here.
But they did a gay pride
And the
pride
Supreme
flag.
Court basically said, if you allow any flag like a gay pride flag, which they did, you can't say no to any other flag. So Liberty Counsel, and I don't love that,
feels
decision,
like a very
but that is what they said.
Short-sighted decision.
But Liberty Counsel is saying, see, so if you allow teachers to include anything else in their email signatures, then you have to allow ours to preach religion. And the school's saying, like, we're not allowing them to post anything that you can't say. This is who I vote for. This is my political party.
Yeah.
Like putting a non-offensive quotation, like that.
It's
whatever.
So, I just can't imagine. Like, I have email signatures, right? Like, I have my name. My email signature is not my place to have some fun and be creative. Like, this is such, like, just, can we just be adults for, like, a fucking second?
And the teacher also said, when the school said, you can't put that in your email signature, she said, well, I have another one, Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Which is the verse that's used to justify child beating among evangelicals.
Like, you don't understand what our objection is here.
True.
It's not that 3:16 specifically isn't great. It's really the Bible.
Yeah.
Also,
can I tell you my favorite part about that?
I hate raise up as a...
train up.
Train up.
Yeah.
Ugh.
When Liberty Counsel tried to make that point, like, mm-hmm. she offered another verse. You said no to that, too. They said it was Proverbs 23:6, which I'm like, that ain't the verse. And you know what Proverbs 23:6 is?
Tell me.
Do not eat the food of a begrudging host. Do not crave his delicacies, which would be a weird thing for any teacher to write in an email signature, period.
That's in
I'm just saying,
Bible?
I know the Bible better than Liberty Counsel
Should
does, because no one noticed
Bible?
That. No. No.
It seems so boring, but like once my little nuggets like that come up, like God really wanted to make sure everybody was like, hey gang, if your host is in a crabby mood, don't eat his food.
But
this is important. Don't worry about raping, okay?
This means the 12-year-old married child who decided to work at Liberty Counsel at 13 doesn't even check Bible verses before dashing off an angry letter. Anyway, here's what the district has said. Occasional use of the district's email address for personal reasons is permitted under their policies
right.
if it does not interfere with the teacher's responsibilities to the district.
That makes sense.
His understanding, according to the school, is that the teacher is not including religious quotes in only her private correspondence, but also uses these religious quotes in her communications to students and their parents in her capacity as an employee. These are not private expression, but rather constitute school-sponsored speech bearing the ostensible endorsement of the school district, basically. So they're not barring her religious viewpoint.
Right.
I mean, they didn't say this. I'm saying this. I'm sure they have plenty of Christians
right.
in their school district. They're just trying to have a consistent approach, and allowing people to put their religious beliefs on full display is not going to be good for anybody.
It's
Other teachers are not allowed to promote Satanism or atheism or Islam or their political beliefs, but this teacher and Liberty Council doesn't think the same rules should apply to Christians.
I guess my question is, like, does that mean I can go to work tomorrow and paint, like, Hail Satan on the wall and be like, well, it's not... It's
like on
just,
your desk in your office
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, like, it's not appropriate. It doesn't matter what it said. It's inappropriate to write something somewhere. And I don't understand why saying school policy says you can, you need, this is what your signature looks like. This and nothing yeah. else.
The closest analog I can think of, probably different because yours is not a government job. Right?
Oh, it's an association.
Sure. So, like, the closest analog I can think of is, like, if you go to a city clerk's office because you got to pay a bill or whatever. There have been instances where some clerk, like Kim Davis or something like that, might have a Bible verse, like, on the wall or something. And it's like, look, if you have it at your desk, we're probably not going to care about it. And no one's filing a lawsuit. FFRF is not angry about that. Mm-hmm. But if you have it on the wall of the office where all the customers who come to the window can see,
because
that's a problem.
Because you
now
work for the government.
You work for the government, and that looks like government-sponsored religion. And that's a school's argument. Like, putting your religion on display, it's public school, it comes off as an endorsement. Just, if it's at her desk or something, they're not going to care. Yeah. But this is not a private thing. This is a public thing she's doing. So here's the question now. The school has said, yeah, we see your complaint. We don't care because we're doing this right. The question now is, will Liberty Council sue and their army of 12-year-old lawyers sue? Right now, they haven't said what they're going to do. I don't think they have a case for what it's worth.
I just have no idea what... Truly, unless every other teacher has, like... hang loose, or like a little phrase, like a yearbook quote under their thing.
But even those do not interfere with their job and would not.
But if that was the case, that like everybody, you get like a little yearbook quote thing on your thing, and hers was religious. If that was the case, okay, I can see where there is some
disconnect.
Everyone
gets to post something.
Right, but not you. Mm-hmm. But this is just like, no, you don't. Again, this goes back to like COVID. You don't just get to do whatever the fuck you want because you're Christian. That's just not how the world works.
Unless you are part of that mega base. I'm going to jump to this somewhat happy story. This one made me happy. Dr. Mackenzie Lystrup, hope I'm pronouncing that right. She just became the first ever female director of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center.
Cool.
Very cool. This is the research lab that develops unmanned spacecraft. So the James Webb Telescope, the Hubble Telescope, has a budget of like $4 billion, and she is the right person for the job. I mean, if you look at her resume, which goes on forever, doctorate in astrophysics, to say the least, has previously was the vice president and general manager of civil space at Ball Aerospace, where she handled their stuff like this. Mm-hmm. So like, very impressive resume. No one's denying the qualifications for this job. Good for her. Very cool. And she's the first woman to lead this whole agency. Fantastic. Here's the thing they did. So I'm reading the press release that NASA puts out because, hey, we have a new leader of this thing. And they mention, like, hey, she's also the first woman to take on this job.
Hey.
Very cool. And then they have the picture of the NASA administrator swearing her in because everyone who has a government job running an agency, you take that. They don't say anything in the press release, but they have the picture. And if you zoom in on the picture and you say she has her hand on a book and she's other hands up in the air saying the oath, what book is her hand on in the picture? And I'm sure you've seen this headline.
I actually did see this, but what I don't know book? Which I know. Is it Cosmos? It's Carl Sagan's
It is
Cosmos?
A Carl Sagan book. It's Pale Blue Dot. And that would be the book that has basically the whole premise of the title there is that the Voyager 1 space probe in 1990 took a picture from outer space, and it just looks like space crap. And then in the middle of the space crap, you see like this pale blue dot, and what Sagan wrote memorably
in
that
good.
Book, look at that dot. That is here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you've ever heard of, every human being who ever was lived out their lives, the aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, dot, 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 dot. every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. Basically, it's the antithesis
Gorgeous.
Of the Bible, because it suggests we're not the center of the universe.
Yeah.
We're just that in the vast solar system universe.
Do you remember the first time you read that?
No, I don't. Because it's so ingrained into me, because I wouldn't have read the book until it had been out for a long time. I think that book came out in 94, maybe, a few years after that picture came out. But I wouldn't have read any of this stuff until about 10 years later, if at all. So it's just been a part of anything, because it's always been one of the, you read that, that's the memorable
thing. I remember the first time I read it, I was at work. It was 2011. Like, I came to all this fairly late, but I remember reading it, and over, you know, it's that picture with just the white text over it, and it, like, took the breath out of me. It was so profound and humbling and all that. So it was just, he was a good one. Good egg.
What I also like about it, it's not just, I don't know what the personal connection is between the doctor who took her oath and the book. I don't know, other than she's a fan of the book.
Yeah, I presume.
But, I mean, if you think about it, that, considering she's running the agency that does unmanned space probes, like the telescopes, think about what that passage in that book represents. It's all about how there is so much we don't know, so much to explore, and why we shouldn't take for granted how lucky we are to have the opportunity to try to answer some of those questions that perplexed our ancestors.
For some reason.
Which is all the work they do there, right?
The thing that cut me to the quick was everyone you've ever heard of lived here. I don't know why that is the thing that, like, made me feel like the tiniest, itty-bittiest, like, thing in the entire world of everybody you've ever heard of. It's just...
Your entire history book only in that
dot.
It's
just this little thing. Outstanding work.
This is not a good analogy. I'm doing this on the fly, but, like, when you think of, like, the Bible and, like, it covers, like, everything, supposedly, that happens, it's like... Well, if you look on a map, it really covers, like, you know, a little dot on the global map as
the
we see it
crescent.
Today, right? It's like, yeah, you're just kind of looking over there. It's not really the whole world. There's a lot of shit happening in the year zero in all these other, so many
point.
Other parts
Especially
of the world.
Especially when we talk about, like, a global flood. It's so much easier to imagine a global...
When their understanding of the globe...
Of the globe is, like, 40 square miles that they can see from where they are. Like, yeah, I can see that filling up. Yeah. But if you look at the pale blue dot and be like, or even just, like, that famous picture, you know, from the moon
And
that
the
they
thing
took,
about that
just...
picture, it yes, obviously it's the pale blue dot, but the fact that there's so much else in the picture and you don't know anything about
to
it.
Us.
Sasha Sagan, Carl's daughter, who is lovely, posted on Instagram. She saw that picture and she commented, this is just thrilling.
Oh, good.
And I will say, I do appreciate this, hopefully, trend of people swearing in on books that actually have meaning, not just to them personally, because for some people, the Bible is the book that brings them meaning, but on books that are actually either personally meaningful or relevant to what they do, or maybe both.
The Constitution, the Declaration of Independence.
Earlier this year, when the new Congress got sworn in, Representative Robert Garcia took his oath on a bunch of objects, and he wanted to make sure, on loan from the Library of Congress, he got a copy of Superman number one.
Aww.
He took his oath on that because he loved that book.
That's so sweet.
Other people have used a Dr. Seuss book, law books,
the
Quran.
Do you think he ran for Congress just so he could have an excuse to touch Superman number one?
As good of a reason as any these days. Other people have done it on a Hebrew Bible. Like, there's no law requiring people to use the Christian Bible.
What would you use?
Good question. Never thought about it. Never
really?
Going to happen. So don't have to.
No,
I'm getting free publicity. I'm using my book.
Which one?
I don't know. I've never read them.
All of them just on a stack.
Right. Yeah. Just on a stack. Like, hey, are you getting the pictures? I'm just going to aim the spines that way. But the point is, they're not all using the Bible. By the way, there's nothing wrong with it. Because
a Republican hasn't done that yet. Like, Donald Trump swore in on his, like, book.
Part of the deal. There you go. And the thing is, like, this is a good trend. You should, it's your personality shining. And, like, there's nothing that says you got to use the Bible. It's a tradition.
Sure.
But traditions like that made to be broken.
Over the last 10 years, we've learned that traditions mean absolutely fucking nothing when it comes to government.
Absolutely.
You didn't ask me what I would
what
swear
would you
in,
swear
but
on?
Honestly, off the top of my head, I think it would probably be the Phantom Tollbooth, because that is the book I've probably read the most. It's my tattoo, and it's my favorite book, and it's a very, like, learning lessons in strange ways, and it's very silly, but a little bit serious. Yeah, I think that's what I would do. I'm sure I have a better answer if I thought about it.
It's a fun. Tell us what you would
do. Yeah, we should do that. We'll do a little Facebook thing.
Sure. Okay, this story is a disturbing one. Here's the headline I saw on the Christian crazy website, Charisma. Christian mom denied adoption for biblical beliefs. And I'm like, well, that seems disturbing. Here you have this lovely looking woman saying that because I'm a Christian, I was not allowed to adopt kids.
See,
and
now,
I'm like, that sounds
sounds like antithetical to the First Amendment.
Right?
So let's strap in.
And then the story is, it's all bullshit, of course. here's what actually happened. This woman's name is Jessica Bates. She wanted to adopt a child. She actually began the process a year ago. But the Oregon Department of Human Services rejected her application. Why? Because there's a part of their application that says you have to respect a child's gender identity, sexual orientation. And she's like, oh, no, I'm not signing on to that. Because the Oregon government basically wants to make sure a foster child, an adoptive child, is their well-being is taken care of,
right,
especially for LGBTQ kids who are likely to be in adoption, or the rate of them being adopted is much higher.
If a gay kid's in the foster care system,
yeah, you
want to
make sure they're
not
taken care of. Yeah. And she is saying, well, I wouldn't be a supportive parent if they're gay or trans.
She said those words?
No, she said, I can't check this box where you say I'm supposed to respect this stuff.
I would be a bad parent. That's why I shan't check this box.
And the thing is, so I'm reading this. She is suing. She's suing Oregon over this. And the lawsuit itself, I'm reading through it, and I'm like looking for where they get to the law part of this thing. And it takes a long while because they
probably
basically spend all this time trying to do like your emotional side of, like, let me tell you her sob story as if that should have any relevance here. And here's what we learn. Like, as the story goes, this is sad. Her husband died in an accident several years ago. Mm. She was left as a widow with 5 children.
Holy shit.
And she wants to adopt more. Like, good for her. Wow. Okay.
Really?
No doubt she's, I mean, whatever, if you want to. All right. No doubt she's been through personal tragedy. But, like, again, her whole thing is none of, the whole thing is none of that matters. Yeah. Because the point is, I'm sorry she had a sad life, but that's no excuse to mistreat or misgender a child that you want to take in.
Lady, maybe you should ruin your own children before you reach out into the community and ruin the rest of them,
I'm guessing that's already happened, given her religious
beliefs.
Well,
I just really want her to focus up on her 5 children to
but
ruin.
Yeah, like, the law here makes a lot of sense, because the state government has a rule that says people looking to adopt must accept and support the orientation and identity of any child the state could place in the applicant's home.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you're also supposed to respect their traditional beliefs, their ethnicity, where they're coming from. Like, of course you want that child to be able to hang on to their identity in that sense. Like, the last thing an adoptive child needs is a parent who will bring on additional suffering. Here's what the law actually says about prospective foster parents. Respect, accept, and support, you have to sign on to this, support the race, ethnicity, cultural identities, national origin, immigration status, sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, disabilities, spiritual beliefs, and socioeconomic status of a child that you want to take into your home.
That's really great that they do that.
Right?
That's,
yeah,
that's really,
you would hope that's what they're doing. And you want to make sure that all members of the household, excluding a child, they want to make sure everyone in the house does not pose a risk to the safety, health, and well-being needs of a child or young adult. Like, that's it. That's the part
and
of the law.
Don't get it twisted. Homophobia is absolutely putting a queer child at risk.
Yeah.
Like, just because you're not beating the shit out of your kid does not mean you're not damaging your kid.
Right. Right. And she also said, like, she didn't want to participate in any sort of, what did she actually say? Like, oh, the lawsuit said something like she doesn't want to do puberty blockers or hormone shots. She would not support that. It didn't even talk about that in the law. The law says just respect your trans kids. Like, use the right pronouns. Respect your gay kids. Don't send them to conversion therapy.
I mean, it sounds like they set up a net to catch bad parents and they caught a bad parents.
Right.
Right? Like, yeah. The system works.
And
the
Oregon is not discriminating against Christians. They're just refusing to place vulnerable kids, already vulnerable kids, in the homes of people who would make their lives worse. Like, putting a child in the home of a bigot is not in anyone's best interest.
Yeah.
The problem here is that she is saying, well, I'm a Christian. And it's like, honey, they did not say they're against you because you're Christian. They're against you because you're a jerk.
Isn't this exactly like those things of when somebody says something like pro-gay and somebody comments like, hey, if this is going to be an anti-Christian space and I don't want to be a part of it. And it's like, right. Nobody said Christian. We just said homophobic.
You're
so
the one that equated the bigotry.
Dog will holler.
Yeah, right. So it's the right call on Oregon's part, like tossing out her application. That's it. She says she's implying trans kids are not going to be respected, so she doesn't get to make the cut. She is not fit to be an adoptive parent.
I think we should take her other five kids away. I don't think that. But
good luck with that.
I hope none of them are.
Like, she reminds me of all those failed athletes who are like, I'm suing a school district because I didn't make the varsity team or something. Like,
is that a real thing?
They get mad sometimes. It's like, you're just not good enough. Deal with it. Yeah. Sorry. That's how it works.
You're not a good fit for us at this time.
And again, the lawsuit offered more specifics on her situation. None of it made her seem better. They pointed out that she went through the process of becoming an adoptive parent a year ago, and that included going to in-person trainings. And the instructor explained, what does that mean in practice? How could parents be support a child's orientation or identity?
And she's like, well, I'm going to write this down and do the opposite.
Yes, exactly. And they said, like, offering suggestions off the top of their heads, they're like, well, you could let a child dress how they want. You could take them to a pride parade.
Like,
that's
one
way to do it.
How
you could put up signs in your home saying, like, hate-free zone, like some school teachers do,
hate
right?
Hate has no home here.
Right. And she's like, what? And that's where
Jesus
she got
hates
mad.
Trans kids, he told me.
Yeah. The training also said, you could take your kids to church, that's fine, but parents should avoid forcing kids to attend any activities, including religious activities, that might be unsupportive of who they are.
Yeah.
Like, you could take your kids to church, but if they're going to a teen youth Christian thing where they're homophobic and transphobic, no, that's not cool. That's not okay. None of that is controversial, by the way. None of that is anti-Christian. That's just anti-hate, anti-bigot. She's the one linking those together in her mind.
Oh, boy.
That lawsuit is happening.
Cool.
I don't
this
know how that plays out.
Everybody's
like, look,
money.
If you want to harm kids who are LGBTQ, there are plenty of faith-based adoption agencies you can go through. But if you want to go through the state, they have an obligation to make sure they are protecting kids, not offering them up to you sacrificially so you can hurt them with your Jesus stuff.
I have a question, or like an observance thing. Do you think, it feels like, so when I started writing for Friendly Atheist in 2012, it felt very much like it was a lot of separation church and state issues where the Freedom From Religion Foundation or whomever was were the ones who are suing, right?
Sure.
We're suing a...
that has been going on for a while.
A town hall that they put up a thing. It seems like it always was atheists suing governments, whatever. Does it feel like it's sort of flipped the other way? That now I feel like most of the lawsuits we have tend to be Christians suing over not getting their way?
I don't know if the numbers say what you're saying. Anecdotally, I kind of see that,
too.
Yeah,
it's definitely anecdotal.
I will say this, though. Because of the makeup of the Supreme Court, 6-3, not in our favor, because so many appellate courts are also leaning conservative so much, I know that a lot of atheist church-state separation groups...
They're not suing. They're not because suing. Because they don't want to face right. this court.
They are very picky about which cases they bring forward because they know not only are we going to lose this case in front of... If, let's say, this goes to the Supreme Court, which doesn't happen very often, but like if we lose, I mean... We're going to lose if it gets in front of them, but also it could set a precedent that it's bad for everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, just because something bad is happening in one state, we definitely don't want to give a judge the opportunity to say, let's have this happen in all the states. So,
actually, good idea.
Right now, because the courts are so conservative, liberals are very careful about what they bring forward and what they sue over. And when they do it, they try to do it strategically. That's when in the past, if you knew it's a 50-50 shot or it's a liberal court, then Christians would be in, the conservative Christians would be in that situation. So that's maybe, maybe that's an answer, but I don't know if that's the answer.
It sounds like it holds water. It's a good observation.
I'll take it.
it's a compliment. I rarely dole them out.
Thank you. Let me jump to, this is probably the last one I want to talk about today, which is a big deal. In Oklahoma, they were considering saying yes to approve a charter school, which functions as a public school, gets taxpayer money. But unlike most charter schools, which have their own problems, this one is a Catholic school. This would have been the first taxpayer-funded public charter school that is Catholic in the country.
That feels illegal in like three different ways.
So many problems with this. So some details here. Oklahoma's statewide virtual charter school board. It's a very niche group of people, five members, but they have to approve all these virtual charters. And there's a lot of them, especially in Oklahoma, where it's very rural. So you might have a charter school that says, we want to help all these kids. We want
to
teach them.
But they have to homeschool because we can't get them to.
But because it's a rural area and everyone's spread out, we do a lot of virtual schooling. Okay, fine. And one of the ones that's up for grabs here, one of the ones applying to become a charter school is St. Isidore of Seville Virtual Catholic Charter School, named after like the...
Isidore of Seville?
I think that's the Catholic guardian angel of like technology or something.
Are they confused about the Barber of Seville?
Yeah, maybe. But anyway,
Figaro.
I'm stopping you before the singing. So... But so they had to decide this week, are we going to approve this school? Like, basically, are we going to let it pass the first regulatory hurdle? There's a long way to go, but this is the first big step. Are you going to give it a green light? And, like, you have all sides that have been weighing in on this for months. Obviously, the church state separation
crowd.
The pro side is, if you allow this is going back to the Supreme Court said, if you... Like in Maine, they had a voucher program that helps rural students. And the Supreme Court said, well, if Maine is going to allow a voucher program to give taxpayer funds to private schools, because it's the only way they can make sure every kid has schooling, then you got to let religious schools get in on it. And that was what these people are citing. They're saying, well, if you allow publicly funded charter schools, you can't say no to us on the basis of religion. That's their defense.
Which is...
The church state separation crowd is... Oklahoma's constitution, Oklahoma's state constitution says you can't use public funds for religious purposes.
Is it clearly
stated? It is
stated?
Very clearly stated. That's called a Blaine Amendment. And they're saying it's right in there.
Amendment.
It has a name. It's in there.
We don't do
explicitly.
Amendments anymore.
So they're like, you can't do it. It violates your own constitution. But this is what the board had to decide this week. So like, just... Here's what the problem is with the Catholic school doing this, just to lay out the church-state separation concerns. This school would not require teachers to be certified, because at a Catholic private school, you don't need teachers to be certified. They don't have to accept openly LGBTQ teachers, because they violate the Catholic Church doctrine. If you're a gay married teacher, they can say no to you. If you're trans, Catholic Church does not believe you exist. There's an open question about what they would do if a student came out as LGBTQ. Yeah. That depends on the school. They would promote Catholic doctrine during school hours. That's part of what they would do. And why are they getting taxpayer funds for that?
Behind this push?
What
like,
push?
Is the Catholic Diocese of Oklahoma?
The Archdiocese of, Oklahoma City? I believe that was the group behind this, yes.
Tulsa? The Paris of Oklahoma?
Something like that. So
people are going to laugh at that, haven't, and then laugh at you for not getting that very funny joke.
Believe it 100%. Then here's another possibility. What if a student becomes pregnant? They could be expelled. Hey, that's a thing the Catholic Church does.
Well, I mean, let alone fucking charters in general don't accept everybody. So, like, now they're
and then
charter schools.
Toss in this fact. This kind of school, a Catholic school, would probably not have the resources or much of a desire to take on special needs students. That's what public schools do. And actually, they asked...
Wait, yeah. They specifically say we're not going to deal with special needs?
During a presentation in February, Laura Schuler, who is the senior director of Catholic education at the Archdiocese, was asked about that. And her, like, are you going to do this? Are you going to help special needs kids? And her answer was, that is something we will need to develop.
Well, especially, you know, kids with all kinds of disabilities are just, like, there. So it's, you sort of have to, like, develop your plan.
I mean, if they don't have a plan,
what
that
means
is they would be siphoning money from the public schools that actually do take care of those kids and sending it to their school to promote Catholicism and not take care of those kids. That's the bigger concern if you care about education.
Well, Jesus said...
Oh, I'm sorry. Jesus does not matter in
bound,
any of this.
Go fuck yourself.
Right.
I think.
Unquote.
Jesus said, "If you have intellectual disabilities, sucks to suck."
Yes.
I think
in that
was the
in
quote,
that tone is
Corinthians
what the Bible said.
4:6.
Yes.
Not even the right book. That's Old Testament, right?
I'm gonna move
Why
on.
Why do I say things
Why
that
do
I know
you
I don't
talk?
Know?
So, also. When they asked the executive director of the Catholic Conference of Oklahoma, his name is Brett Farley, about all these concerns, he's like, well, these are all hypothetical situations, so I can't speak to any of them. Like, what about gay teachers? What about trans students? He's like, oh, there are no actual cases in front of me. It's like, dude, Catholic doctrine is all about the hypotheticals, and the Vatican has no problem addressing all of those things. So, anyway, okay, here's where it gets even weirder, though, because... Last year, they had the support of their attorney general. The Oklahoma Attorney General, John O'Connor, last December wrote non-binding opinion, but he released a statement in December saying, you know what? I've looked into this and everything's cool. You could say
no
yes.
Notes.
No notes. You could say yes. He said in an advisory opinion that the state's current ban on publicly funded charter schools being operated by sectarian and religious organizations, and how it could be a violation of the U.S. Constitution and maybe Oklahoma's, he said, it's fine. It's not going to be a problem. I'm not worried.
I know a guy.
Yeah. He said it should not be enforced.
Why does this one guy get to...
Because he was the state's attorney general who would be the person who would have to defend all this stuff.
I gotcha.
And after he issued that opinion, Americans United for Separation of Church and State warned the virtual charter school board, like, hey, you know what O'Connor just said? You should ignore all of that because we actually know the law. Here's what they wrote. This is Americans United. Reclassifying charter schools as private actors would be a sea change in the law that would upend the entire educational landscape
would.
In Oklahoma. And by the way, a 2007 Oklahoma Attorney General opinion, like actually counted, affirmed that charter schools are part of the public school system.
Well,
you can't say it's a private school that gets to operate however it wants because it is a public school. Okay. And then more recently, Oklahoma has a state superintendent of public instruction. His name is Ryan Walters. He is a Christian nationalist. And he said, you guys, I'm good with this Catholic charter school as well. Governor Kevin Stitt also supports the proposal. But here's where it gets even weirder. Because last year, before the elections in November, there was actually a primary for Oklahoma's attorney general. And another Republican ran against O'Connor. The other Republican beat O'Connor. And so during that lame duck session when O'Connor was in office, but he's heading out, that's when he issued that advisory opinion. And the new Republican attorney general, his name is Gentner Drummond. He's the guy who won. He released his own statement in February. Guess what he said?
Same thing.
No.
Oh.
He said what the Americans United was saying. He said religious liberty is one of our most fundamental freedoms. The opinion as issued by my predecessor misuses the concept of religious liberty by employing it as a means to justify state-funded religion. He wrote, I doubt most Oklahomans would want their tax dollars to fund a religious school whose tenets are diametrically opposed to their own faith.
Mm, wow.
I don't say this often, but everyone should listen to Oklahoma's Attorney General on this issue. So, like,
the new one, right?
The new one. So the here's what you have. You have
2.0.
Old school, like, Attorney General saying everything's fine. You have everyone in Oklahoma's MAGA establishment Republican Party saying, yeah, everything's cool with this Catholic school.
I think we're going to get away with it, guys.
And then you have the current Attorney General and all the church-state separation people saying, this is a bad idea. And, like, they're not even threatening a lawsuit. They're just saying, we're telling you, this is all against the law.
So at this point...
And now, this week, that virtual charter school board had to meet because they have a deadline of the end of this month to say yes or no to this application.
Okay.
And they've done the present your case to us, answer our questions, and they had all that information, and now they got a vote. So that vote was this week. And, like, this, how important is this vote? I'm watching the live stream at some point this week of this nobody board.
Wow.
Because I'm like, what are they going to do? I assume, because it's Oklahoma, it's 5-0. Everyone's going to be like, yeah, we're cool with it.
Right.
I assume that's how it's going to go.
Yeah, because we've lived in the world long enough. Yeah.
Looking at their resume, too, like, one of the dudes on this board is, like, appointed by STIT, I think. Like, another one runs a Catholic school somewhere. It's
Come on.
Like, I know how this is going to happen. And as I'm watching it, they're all raising, like, good questions about their concerns. And one of them was like, okay, let's set aside the legality of the school. Let's say there is a lawsuit over this. Let's say we approve it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a lawsuit.
Okay.
And it sounds like there's a pretty strong case as to why we should not approve this school.
Right.
Could we be sued in our personal capacity? Because that has happened in the past. And they're like, I don't want to be sued over... Because their argument is, if our lawyer on this board says, yeah, there are legal reasons you should not do this.
Uh-huh.
And then we vote to say yes anyway. Could we be sued personally for ignoring our lawyer's advice here?
I don't know how the law works. Is that a possibility?
That could be a possibility. Wow. And they were, like, trying to figure this out. One person specific, the one woman on that board is like, why am I just finding out now what my options are about this? I'm pissed off that I'm only learning about my options regarding all this right now.
Okay, so they have been not only, like, obviously, being assholes in general, but they have been... Like,
I will say this. They were not being assholes. They've been attentive to the application process. They haven't weighed in.
No, I'm sorry.
So I don't want to cast any aspersions on the board.
I'm talking about the people who submitted...
Yes.
Who submitted the thing. Not only were they, like, trying to get away with this shitty thing to do, but they knew that they were doing something wrong because they clearly have been...
Well, their argument is we're not doing anything wrong because the law that you're talking about does not apply to us because of recent Supreme Court cases.
What is it this person just said? What?
This person said, okay, I hear what their argument is. The Supreme Court has made these decisions more recently.
Mm-hmm.
That is why it overrides what our state constitutions... I know there's a legal argument that the school is making, but also it sounds like these other church state separation people are making their cases.
Sure.
And also that, and then there are other issues. One of the public commenters, just some people chiming in before they vote, was like, I'm religious, but I want you to know, like, if you say yes to this school, what are you going to do when Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple says, I want to build a charter school? Because you won't be able to say no to him. Literally cited the Satanic Temple.
Wow.
Like, you had, by the way, I listened to the public comments. There was only comments, no responses.
Oh, I see.
Every commenter said this is a horrible idea. Every single one of them. So, like...
But, I mean, let's not confuse it, because public opinion doesn't always influence politicians,
right,
ironically enough.
But they listen to all those people.
I think, truly, the personal lawsuit is the only thing that's going to sell them.
I'm telling you, the body language of that woman, she was so pissed to know that, like, what are your legal options here? And the answer wasn't great or whatever. And so after hours of discussion, they voted 5-0, not to 100% reject the application.
Okay.
But to reject it as is.
Okay.
Surprise, but wow.
Okay.
Good. Reject it as is, which buys them some time now. Now, the application goes back to the Catholic school board, the people trying to get this application through, and the board raised like 6 or 7 different concerns that they said, you need to answer these questions for us before we take a final vote.
Ooh, do we have
on
questions?
Your application. In general, some of them were technical. How are you going to address special education? How is your board managed? Because we looked at your application. There's some technical stuff that they're like, I don't think this works.
Are charter schools legally obligated in Oklahoma to take on special ed kids?
It's a good question that I don't have the answer
okay.
to.
I'm just curious. They also wanted to know, like,
one of the questions they wanted to throw in at the end there, why do you think you're on the right side of the law? I want it in writing. Because, like, if we get sued over this, we are 100% blaming you.
Can we talk about asking straightforward questions and right? how sexy that is?
Oh, it's great. So, basically, they've rejected the application.
Yeah.
It goes back to the board.
Yeah.
They now have, like, I think a month to get it back. But once they get those answers, they will still have to take a vote on this charter school. They've delayed the inevitable mm-hmm. for good reason. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, no matter what they do, and they made a point of saying this out loud, no matter what they do, they know there's going to be a lawsuit over this. The chair of the board, I will give them credit. I think these were like 5 Republicans and like 3 of them. I don't even know. On paper, they look like people who would 100% say yes to the board, the school. I got to say, listening to the board meeting, I'm like, they're all saying and asking the right questions.
Okay.
Even the guy who seems to say, like, he seemed in favor of it. He's like, I just want to do my job as the board chair.
Truly.
So I'm trying to manage this meeting. Like, I was pleasantly delighted watching that meeting.
I love that. Because when I talk a lot about people being, like, intellectually honest about things.
Yeah.
And that's genuinely what I look for in a person. Like, people can have different opinions than mine. But I hope that they're coming to those opinions in a way that has, like, I can relate to and understand. So And, you know, if they disagreed with me, I would appreciate the fact that they were actually asking pressing questions
yeah.
instead of, like, what the GOP does to Mike Kavanaugh, to
Brett Kavanaugh. Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, okay, good for them. Good for them. The bar is low, but they cleared it.
I wanted to see answered. If having this school was so damn important to the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, like, why not just open up your own private school? That's what Catholic schools are, right?
Good point.
Like, why not
why
just
do
it?
Why do they need Oklahoma State funding?
The Catholic Church said, well, one, we don't have the money for it, which is laughable.
You've got a couple spare thrones.
But also they said there are other free virtual schools that get taxpayer funding. There are public schools in Oklahoma, virtual schools, that do get taxpayer funding. And basically they could not convince anyone. They would not be able to convince anyone to go to their school and pay money or anything because there are free options. They could not give a Catholic education because other free charter schools that are virtual
do have
they get public funding, and like they want to have their Catholic education and make and I think they would take tuition too, but like they would get taxpayer funding. Like, whatever. They just said we couldn't compete. We can't compete against free virtual charter schools.
Well,
if we were a private Catholic school that charges tuition and does all the stuff we do, why would anyone come to us?
Because you have a bad business model. Are you just discovering
this
now? So they're
saying, we want a charter school so no one has to pay tuition.
These motherfuckers for a century have been charging people for something that everybody else gets for free, aka K-12 education. And they're just now concerned that their business model, which, to be clear, is... Yeah, you can do this pretty good thing for free, but here's this much, much, much worse thing. And you can pay as much as a college education for it,
right?
Motherfuckers. And your kid is going to leave here not understanding math or history. That
right.
is the guarantee.
There are some really good Catholic schools. They're few and far between, but that's the thing. Like, so their argument is, well, we can't charge tuition because the good stuff already exists for free. And we just want to do the thing everyone else is already doing.
Do you think that's a good argument?
Yeah, I don't get the argument. Now, here's the most interesting part of all of this.
This feels like a cancel culture thing of like, you guys won't pay me for a thing. That's against my personal rights. Like, no, dog.
Yeah.
Like, just because you came up with this little business plan does not mean that, like, the world is obligated to fold itself so you can make it happen.
Which is what no one wants to say to Elon.
What is going on?
Okay.
What's the titter thing? What is that?
We'll talk about it in bonus. Okay. here's the best part about this. I said all those public commenters at that meeting spoke against the Catholic school, and the board voted 5-0 to delay their vote on the Catholic school. There was one person at this meeting who really wanted them to approve it right then and there, and it was Ryan Walters, the state superintendent of public instruction, who is a MAGA cultist who has been, who only loves culture war issues and hates actual public schools.
Sure,
but he spoke up at the meeting, and of course the board here is like, well, we have a state official who's sitting at our table here.
Right.
All right, go ahead and speak. I'm going to quote what he said here. You've heard from some radical leftists that their hatred for the Catholic Church blinds them from doing what's best for kids. Their hatred for the Catholic Church has caused them to attack our very foundation of religious liberties in attacking this school. Goes on like this for a little while. And he's basically saying all those public commenters who politely explain why giving public money to a religious institution was a bad idea. Mm-hmm. He's like, they are radical leftists who hate the church. The chair of the board, a guy who I think wants to approve this school, had to chime in afterwards. And he's like, I'm going to respectfully say I didn't hear any radical leftists and I didn't hear anyone express any hatred for the Catholic Church. Like, Ryan Walters chimed in to try to steer this thing in his favor. And I think he made everything worse. Because at that point, everyone on the board is like, well, I don't know what I was going to vote before, but, like, I don't want to go along with what you just said.
Yeah, like, I mean, it really, I feel like he tried to, like, gaslight everybody in front of them, and they were like, no, that isn't what happened, though, is a thing, right? Man. Like, it seems like he was like, you guys remember when those scary atheists were here? You guys remember the communists who were threatening me?
If they were on the fence about it, after his little speech, I think they were 100% like, I can't, because if that means you get what you want, I do not want to go along with it.
And what you are willing to do to get what you want, like, that isn't promising.
I will say, listening to the meeting, like, a lot of those board members, even if you take aside the legal issues, like, I don't think they seemed enthusiastic about moving forward. And I think what will happen in the course of a few weeks, the Catholic school is not going to have a good legal answer for why they think they're on the right side of this issue. And I think because
to read those letters.
Yeah, because of a mix of the legal concern, like, you got to go with what you think is under the law, and the law in Oklahoma, state law, says, no, you can't give money to religious, taxpayer money for religious, to promote religion. They're going to be like, well, the legal case is against us. The ethical case, because these people don't seem like they know what they're doing, which was another concern that was brought up at this meeting. Like, their application has flaws. Like, just putting aside the Catholic thing, their application as a charter school sucks.
You know what this feels a little like is, all the anti-abortion bills that were, like, the trap laws, basically. Not the trap laws. That's not what it was. Trigger laws.
Trigger laws.
Okay, these trigger laws are going to hit into effect. And the law is like, nobody with a viable pregnancy can cause their pregnancy to end. And doctors are like, well, this is fucking nothing. Like, this is not anything I can... What does this mean? This is just some dude who, like, blindfolded himself and, like, typed away on his iMac.
I
feel like it's very similar to this, of like the second somebody pulls really like these kinds of things, these sort of like grandstanding, we need Christianity everywhere, the guy kneeling in his high school football game or whatever.
Yeah, Bremerton, the Kennedy dude.
It's really all of, it's just showing us that these people just think they can do whatever they want. And if one person had asked one intelligent question about this Bremerton story, I think this sort of, like, or if the initial people who, like, saw the story, whoever, like, the jury or whomever, had this sort of bigger concept of what's going on around the country of, like, ooh, this is happening all over the place, that Christians just want to do whatever the fuck they want, and if anybody tells them they can't do any certain thing, they're going to get, you know, they're
going to
get got.
Yeah, when you hit judges who are all on your side, you're not trying to make a case. I mean, remember the Supreme Court decision in that case, they're all like, he was just doing private prayers. And Sonia Sotomayor's dissent is like, here's
he
a picture of him.
Wasn't.
Here's all the people surrounding him. It ain't private.
He hella wasn't.
Anyway, so I hope this Oklahoma school board does the thing. I thought 100% they were going to go along with it. I remember I was writing this article as it's happening, and then I'm like, well, what are they going to do? You know what? They're going to, of course they're going to approve it. I'll write it up as if they approved
it. Like a politician ran a concession speech and a victory speech.
I wrote up the, well, of course they approved it. And then I'm like, I don't know.
Gotta edit.
And then I'm like, oh shit, they said the other thing. I mean, they delayed it, but
unanimous, you said?
It was unanimous to delay it for now, get more answers from the school, and then decide. And then I hope they say no, because they should say no. I mean, if, let's say it worked. Let's say they said yes to the school, and this Catholic school opens up as a publicly funded charter school. Uh-huh. Holy shit, the floodgates that that would open.
Oh my God.
Because now every Catholic school is going to demand the ability to operate as a publicly funded charter school. Other religions, evangelicals, are going to open up their own private schools and say, oh, give us your tax dollars. Public schools will suffer because they're losing money, because not only are some kids leaving, the money that they need to run their schools. And who's left out? The people who need those dollars to do special needs education, helping marginalized kids, all that stuff goes by the wayside. So it's just a horrible, I mean, this is the argument you can make for charter schools in a lot of cases in general, but for a private religious school too, there's no reason to mix the two. Just a horrible idea.
Yeah, that's bad. Bad.
I'll stop there. What do we have going on in the bonus episode today?
Oh, you know what? I started with a very short list and it got longer. I'm going to tell you a story about Brooke Shields, which is a Blumke family legend that just came home to roost this past weekend. It truly is one of the wildest things that ever happened to me. That's my Brooke Shields story. I was going to talk about Scotty, our new horse, but despite say he's the best and I'm obsessed with him. Don't write that down.
Cross out.
The newest season of Taskmaster. Beep, bop, boop. Oh, okay. So the big ones I definitely want to talk about are Brooke Shields and this story about a waitress from the restaurant I go to on Monday nights.
Okay. I want to talk about Chicago hosting the DNC.
Yeah, I saw you write that note, and I'm excited to chat about that because I don't know what it means. I looked like an undercover cop all day today. And also, this isn't going to be a bonus thing, but I just wanted to point out the I was visiting my folks in Wisconsin over the weekend, and my dad insisted that we watch, as a family, the concession speech from that judge and how shitty it was.
Oh.
We sat down as a family.
In Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Ungraceful, no gratitude.
No gratitude. He says he does
Daniel
not.
Kelly.
Daniel Kelly. He says he doesn't respect it. Like, I wish I had a honorable opponent to concede to. It's so sour grapes. Even my dad described it as toxic masculinity, which, gang, you don't know how far we've come. But truly, I just, it's so wild.
That is
wild.
A good family viewing speech.
Because my dad's like, you haven't seen it? I was like, no, I don't like that bullshit. He's like, no, you need to watch it. And so I like tried to find it. And we're like, no, it's on the TV. We're putting it on the TV. Anyway, that was the end
good
of that
times.
Story. You can always find us on where?
Go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support this show. You could find me at Hemant Mehta on Twitter. You can also email us at friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com.
I don't think we have any new... Did I do the bee's knees one?
Sure. I think you did. Okay. You can leave us reviews on the iTunes.
Here's the bee's knees. This is a comment from Air Squeeble. 5 stars. It's called the bee's knees. Do bees have knees? Listen to this wonderful podcast, and that will remain unanswered.
You know we are not a science show.
But what you will get is an exceptional podcast that covers current events with a more rational approach. This is the only atheist podcast I quote religiously listen to still, because by covering current events, it stays fresh. The hosts are both knowledgeable and funny. Oh, she thinks you're funny.
Oh, that makes one person in my life orbit.
Definitely not me. Can't overstate how much I enjoy the show, because rather than hear people debate about what 2,000-year-old God said through an interpreter, I get to hear about that deity's followers are affecting my daily life. Thanks again. 5 stars. That is a
you get
outstanding
it.
Review.
I like that.
Thank you, Air Squeeble. That was really good.
I cannot tell you how many times... people will ask me, hey, can we interview you for whatever, our podcast and stuff? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah.
And then they're surprised. And I'm like, I don't want to debate God with any of you. And they're all like, what?
Really,
like, you haven't heard the show ever.
It really,
you haven't read anything I've ever written because I don't waste my time doing it.
It truly is a thing I often have to explain.
And then I send them
to
Matt Dillahunty. And I'm pretty sure he's pissed.
This is what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Go hang out with Dillahunty. He'll argue with
my
you.
My email address.
That's so funny.
Is Matt at...
Oh, boy. I mean, truly,
I
like,
don't tell him in advance. I'm just like, here's who you're looking for. Here's his address.
Here's a funnel.
Here's his address. I kid.
Truly, when I tell people about what I do, I'm
I don't
like,
respond to emails.
I don't give a I don't give a shit about, like, what people believe in. I just care how it affects people. And people are like, that doesn't seem right. Anyway, should we go so we can
we'll
do
the bonus.
It's
we'll talk to you.
10:30 p.m. Wow. What are we doing here?
All right. See you at the bonus. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
See you soon.